Daft on draft. We got through week four of the college football slate. There were some uppers and there were some downers. There were a couple of close games for some ranked opponents, or ranked teams against some what we believe to be weaker opponents. And then the one game that I really sat down to watch here in Portugal at the noon slate ended up being a stinker. I turned on Clemson and NC State, and NC State continues to just utterly disappoint. But we've gone through the tape. We have helmet stickers for guys for week four performances. But unfortunately, we got to talk about a couple of injuries first.
Yeah. So we raved last week on the podcast. You got a helmet sticker last week, actually.
Yeah.
About ECU cornerback Savon Revel. Again, a guy that I think was pretty, maybe not, I mean, the NFL draft's always unpredictable, but a guy that I thought was a top 15 pick. Who I said probably had the best long speed of any cornerback in this class and had that amazing, like that track that crossed across the field for that pick six in, against Appalachian State last week. And he tore his ACL in practice. Big time bummer. Again, he's a senior, fifth year guy, a JUCO guy. So he's still going to declare. Mm-hmm. And I mean, ACL injuries now, they aren't what they were, right? ACL injuries used to be a kiss of death. Used to be a kiss of death. And now we see guys coming back in 8 months, 6 to 8 months from ACL injuries, which is just a ridiculous insane turnaround. Yeah. Insane. I mean, so there's a chance that he could still be back by rookie training camp, like by training camp at an NFL level. But like, he's not going to be able to test. He's not going to be able to go to the Senior Bowl, and he's not going to be able to have a pro day, most likely. That would be a ridiculous turnaround.
Well, he won't be able to perform at the Senior Bowl. I assume he'll still be there, right?
Right. Which, I have mixed opinions about the Senior Bowl, and I'm sure people overhype the Senior Bowl quite a bit. Like, people were talking about Roman Wilson going to the first round. The guy can't even get active for the Steelers, which he's been hurt, but he was healthy this week. He was a healthy scratch. So, like, we tend to overhype Senior Bowl performances, in my opinion, especially wide receiver one-on-ones. I mean, guys, like, tiny guys are supposed to win them. They're going to win them against 6'3" corners. But what I will say about the Senior Bowl is it is an opportunity for Group of Five division to FCS players to go against P4 guys. And that's a place where Quinyon Mitchell went out and showed out. And he was the first cornerback off the board and has been playing spectacularly for the Eagles. You know, Kyle Duggar was the best player at the 2020 Senior Bowl when I was there in 2020. Like, he was the best player on the football field from a Division II school. Like, that's where those guys, Christian Watson in 2022, Christian Watson had a great Senior Bowl, got him drafted in the top 40. So, like, that's where the Senior Bowl matters, in my opinion, is those smaller school prospects, even the Group of Five level, get a chance to go against P4 competition. And that's an opportunity that Revel won't get now because of that. And I think that's probably the biggest hindrance to his draft stock. Do I still think he goes first round? I mean, it's a deep cornerback class. So you could have guys jumping him at the back end that I didn't think would, but it's a really good cornerback class. So but I still think he goes top 50. Like, he's got top 50 tape easily and traits easily. And again, ACLs aren't a kiss of death anymore. So I still think he goes top 50 first round. We'll see, especially for a G4 guy, but top 50. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of ACLs, unfortunately, Harold Perkins, mm-hmm. LSU's do it all defender.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, he's a linebacker at the NFL level, right? I mean, he's mm-hmm. what, 215 pounds, and he's very small.
Very small.
But he's the best thing that he does is rush the passer for LSU. So, I mean, it was good to see him kind of get back into that role at LSU for a bit. That's what he wanted to do there at the end. And then it is unfortunate that he ended up tearing his ACL. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with his process now, especially being not even a tweener, but a full out
undersized linebacker. Yeah.
And an undersized one at that. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I tend to think that he's a case we're going to see him go back to school. Like, I don't know how we don't see Harold Perkins go back to school now. Again, he doesn't have the resume on tape of a linebacker where he projects. And then as a linebacker, he's already undersized. He's undersized as an edge. Yeah. He can't live on the edge at the end. It's just,
No.
There's no pathway except going back to school for him.
Yeah, well, and the problem with evaluating linebackers at the college level is what they do at the college level is ridiculous. It's not what they're going to be doing at the NFL level. So you're pretty much picking and choosing and guessing at linebacker when it comes to, especially from a coverage perspective. Mm-hmm. But let's get to happier stuff now. All right. We're here to talk about helmet stickers. And I put the tweet out earlier, and everybody is so Cowboys focused right now. I was like, give me helmet stickers for guys. And everyone's like, give me a D tackle. Give me the. And I'm like, no, guys, this is for college. I'm on another podcast here. Tell me what guys showed out in college football this past week. And I actually ended up picking one of the guys that was given to me as a potential solution there. So we will get to that. But first, I want to let you start with your first helmet sticker. And I think this would be a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you because I also cover the Browns. And a lot of my content is pretty Browns focused. And they have, you know, probably the 32nd offense in the NFL right now. And their quarterback is giving Bryce Young a run for his money for the least efficient quarterback in the NFL right now. So it is also hard to talk draft about people being like, oh, you're talking draft already. It's like, dude, I always talk draft. You just follow me for my Brown stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, my first one, and it is interesting, but I'm giving it to Shedeur Sanders, man. I'm giving it to Shedeur Sanders. I do think he had some uncharacteristic. I went and I charted the game this morning, as I do every draft eligible quarterback who is worth following. I charted his game this morning, went back and charted it, and he did have some uncharacteristic misses over the middle. Like, that's usually where he's pinpoint is throwing, you know, those slants, the skinny posts, backside digs, hooks. That's his money ball. And he had some uncharacteristic misses on those throws this game. But in terms of putting a team on his back, again, he has the worst protection of any power four quarterback. And it's not the same as like the NFL level. Like, it's easy to compare to the nasty man in Cleveland right now because he's also like, fan base is also, I mean, there's nobody blocking for him, blah, 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 blah. It's different for Shedeur because he legitimately has no windows to like, rarely has situations to step up into. And I thought he did a really good job in this game of sliding in the pocket, stepping up. And something that we need to talk about a little bit is that Shedeur Sanders is going to be talked about as a mobile quarterback because of the color of his skin. Shedeur Sanders is a pocket passing quarterback through and through. Through and through.
Because you wouldn't look at Geno as a mobile quarterback or a dual threat
Dak Prescott
guy. And that's pretty much who he is when it comes to him as an athlete. Like, yes, both of them can get on the hoof and pick up a third down, but that's not what they are. That's not what they want to do. So, he's it's going to happen. And I think that usually it is because of the color of their skin. But with him specifically, I think it's a double whammy being Deion Sanders' son, one of the best athletes that we've seen at the NFL level of all time.
And so I
do think you have a double whammy there with that.
Yeah. But in this game, I thought he did a really good of not only stepping up, but he found pockets and he knew it's such a distinctive thing for quarterbacks too, especially those pocket passers. And I think like Dak is really good at it. I think Jared Goff is getting better at it as he gets older somehow of like knowing I just need to tuck it. Not only do I need to tuck it, but I know I need to know when to get down. And I thought Shedeur did an unbelievable job in this game. He had some broken sacks where he created out of structure as well. That like those were plays where he was just running around for his life last year and taking a massive sack. I still think his pressure to sack is really, really high. And it wasn't. He got sacked 8 times in this game. But for Shedeur, it's a little bit different to contextualize again because his offensive line is legitimately terrible. It's legitimately terrible. But again, I charted him at 5 for 5 on throws of 25 or longer in depth. And that's not 5 for 5 on, like caught. That's 5 for 5 on target. I thought he had a beautiful back shoulder that hit the receiver in the hands at the 1 yard line. He had another deep ball down the sideline that hit the same receiver in the hands and he dropped it. He had a nice, like it was they run a lot of shallow cross clear out, there with Travis Hunter and Jimmy Horn Jr. They ran a really beautiful, clear out tendency breaker where Travis Hunter came across like clear out and then he ran a bender through too high. And it was beautiful, like on the money, beautiful deep ball. So, Shedeur did everything that he could in this game. And that wasn't, I don't chart Hail Marys because Hail Marys are fluky plays. Like it's not a chartable throw. You're just throwing it up and hoping somebody makes a play on the football. Right. So like, that's 5 for 5 without including that Hail Mary, which was outside of structure and the flick of a wrist. So like in a quarterback class, and seeing how some of these quarterbacks in the NFL are flailing because they can't get their eyes on time and just deliver the football, it's making me love Shedeur Sanders this game even more, because he's doing that in the worst possible context of an offensive line that you could imagine. And so, especially in this quarterback class, like I'm becoming a Shedeur guy. So he balled out in this game, in my opinion, even despite of those uncharacteristic misses over the middle that he had.
How do you think NFL teams will look at his, not off the field, I would say, but the way that he speaks about teammates and the, I guess I would call it accountability that he demands, but he does it in a very prime way of he is honest to a fault. And I wonder how the NFL will look at that specifically because he is a quarterback.
I think it'll scare off 70% of teams. I think there are some teams out there who will say, we are going to get this guy into our locker room with some veterans who are going to kick that shit to the curb. Duh. Again, it's weird. Like Baker Mayfield is a pretty decent example of this. Baker Mayfield was the biggest man on campus at Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield was even the biggest person in the locker room in Cleveland as the first overall pick on a historically bad football team, like 1-31 football team he came into. So, but then it fell apart in Cleveland, and then it fell apart in Carolina. And I think Baker Mayfield had a reality check. Like, this is my livelihood. And he's in Tampa now, where I think it was a kind of a humbling experience. And so, I think there are some teams with really good veteran locker rooms that will take him in, and they will curb that pretty quickly. I think Pittsburgh is a very good example of this. But again, I don't think Pittsburgh is kidding themselves about what they're getting out of Justin Fields this year. I think they'll be pretty heavily invested in trying to find a quarterback. And I think Mike Tomlin is a perfect head coach of a guy who could curb something like that. And guys like Cameron Hayward, TJ Watt.
We've seen it with 8,000 of their wide receivers already. Right.
Yes. Antonio Brown, while in Pittsburgh versus not in Pittsburgh, is just a bizarre thing. And so I think they're like coming into an NFL locker room. It's not so much how do teams handle this, but do you have the locker room who will support a guy like this as he matures and grows? Because again, big man on campus at Jackson State, big man on campus at Colorado. He's been with his dad this whole time. Like, that's not going to be the case at the NFL. And so he's going to hit a reality check, whether that happens as soon as he gets in the NFL, or if he has to flail at first in the NFL before he realizes, like, I'm not the big man anymore. Like, this, I'm not the big man on campus. And there are people way bigger than me in this locker room. I think that's going to be the big adjustment. Again, everything that I've heard from scouts, and I have a few scouts that I talked to, have said he's passing character checks. He's got his head on right, but he does carry himself in a very Shedeur centric way, where he is at the center.
My guy, my first guy, is somebody who I might end up falling in love with in this class as the Taylor Heineke like backup quarterback at the NFL level. And that is Illinois' Luke Altmyer. Somebody who, the minute I started watching him in this Nebraska game, I said he was a baseball player. He was a shortstop. He was a second baseman. He was a middle infielder. There's no doubt about it. He is, when it comes to the ability to switch up arm angles and create velocity from some really wacky positions, he's able to do it, even though he is like 6'1", 200 pounds soaking wet. Like, he is not a big dude. He is my modern version, I would say, of like a Brett Rypien, who I was just a massive fan of coming out of Boise State. But for Luke in this game, I just thought that he was phenomenal because they threw everything, that Nebraska defense threw everything that they could at him. Illinois football focus, so PFF for Illinois on Twitter said 12 times he was blitzed, completed 10 of them, 83.3% completion percentage, 139 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a passing grade of 83.4. And that's kind of what I saw when he was being pressured. And it wasn't just when he was being blitzed either. When he was being pressured and he was able to still stand steady and deliver passes while he was being hit and get the ball out to the sideline, I was left wondering how somebody with his size was able to get that much juice on the football. Because he doesn't even have like a super violent motion either. but a little scrawny guy, really tough. He's a pretty decent athlete. He kind of just reminds me of maybe a little bit bigger arm Taylor Heinicke, somebody who he's not going to be a starter at the NFL level. Those guys just they don't exist at the end. There's no more Doug Flutie's out there. Right. You have to be a freak like Kyler, and he is definitely not that sort of freak. But he could be in my opinion, there's a chance he could be a quality backup in a situation like Arizona or like somewhere, you know, even behind a mobile quarterback like in Cleveland behind the bad man. So, I mean, it's just a really, really fun player that I got to watch against the next big thing who we will talk about tomorrow on the podcast.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country, and jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Yeah, so 10 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's huge.
Yeah, and it's not like he's lighting the world on fire from a yard per attempt standpoint. Like he's very much facilitating in that offense and kind of creating where he can, but it is a lot of RPO. It's a lot of the offense that I run in NCAA. And then when he's able to take his shots, he'll take his shots. And I thought that a lot of the downfield accuracy stuff was pretty good from a placement perspective. But yeah, it's a very college offense.
Yeah, but Illinois kind of established an identity, and talking on a more of a college football specific rather than draft potential, like, because we are doing a recap of college football as well. Like, I really think this Illinois team could punch some of those from some of those Pac-12 teams in the mouth. Like
they've been a punchy team for a while now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, their defense 2 years ago was phenomenal with Johnny Newton and Devon Witherspoon and Quan Martin and all those guys. They've established something there for sure. My next guy, I'm gonna stick with the Big Ten, and the Big Ten has a lot of really good running backs, man. Like, I'm really, like, the kid from from USC impressed me. There's just so many good Big Ten running backs out there right now, the two Ohio State guys. But I'm going to go to Iowa, and I'm going to talk about Caleb Johnson. So Caleb Johnson, I think, still has a tendency to bounce more often than I love in a running back. But again, talking about our ideal build, I said I would prefer a muscle hamster, but Caleb Johnson's probably a little more standard of a running back build at 6'2", 225. So he's got a really nice build as well. And what he's doing for Iowa, because Iowa can't throw the football with Cade McNamara, is phenomenal. And the way when he does run through the interior, the way that he's making himself small and avoiding contact or working through contact, and it's tremendous. Again, this past week at Minnesota, so a Big Ten game where the first three were against, well, I guess one was against Iowa State, who's ranked as well. So I can bring that up too. But against Minnesota, 21 carries, 206 yards, 3 touchdowns. Just a tremendous output. And again, 2 weeks ago against Iowa State, where they just completely folded in that game and gave it away to Iowa State pretty much, 25 carries, 187 and 2. So he's starting to stack some games against P4 competition, true junior. Again, a little more bouncy than I'd like. You know, I have a good buddy who's an Iowa fan who says, like, yeah, that's what they talk about on the broadcast. They're working hard at getting him to put his foot in the ground and get back inside. So yeah, I'm going to be watching for that as this develops, because this guy could be a day two running back. He's that explosive, and he's putting up the production. And there's no tread on his tires as a true junior. So this is a guy that I'm going to be watching pretty closely. I mean, he had 117 carries last year as a true freshman, 151. So, I mean, he's on pace for over 200 this year. He's easy money. So we'll see, but he's already up to 685 yards and 9 touchdowns through 4 games at Iowa. So Caleb Johnson, you have my full attention.
Nice. Nice. This is the Daft on Draft podcast, but it is the Daft on Draft podcast presented by Harold Fannin Jr. And that is my guy this week. Yeah, I'm stealing him from Corey.
Listen, I specifically didn't choose him because I talked so much about him on the podcast. I was like, I can't choose Harold. Yes. I can't choose him.
When you are Bowling Green and you have now lost to Penn State by 7 and Texas A&M by 6, and it is largely because of your tight end, that's massive.
Also, did you see that game where he was wide open in the end zone on a reverse pass or a toss pass? Wide open in the receivers. I can't remember if it was reverse or a toss, but the non-quarterback couldn't hit him. They had a chance to win that game in the red zone.
Did you see him? I forget which game it was that I was watching him in, but they gave it to him on a toss, and he threw a pass with yes. glove on, and yes. it was in stride. So he can pass as well. But, I mean, he ended up getting 8 for 145, and there were some times where, you know, the Texas A&M defense is unserious and kind of allowed him to skirt free down the field, and they were easy pitches and catches. But like, even his 65-yard touchdown that he scored, he absolutely made the safety look bad.
Yes.
And that is a 230, 235-pound human being out there who I think is kind of stiff, actually, mm-hmm. as a player as well. Like, he's explosive, but he's a little bit stiff. It takes him a little extra step. But when he gets the ball in his hand, you can really see that he knows what he's doing. He knows how to set up defenders, and he has the explosiveness and the speed to kind of outrun guys. I love what they're doing, throwing in some of these tight end middle screens because it shows yeah. his vision as well. He had one where he scored, and I think it ended up getting mm-hmm. called back. But just an outstanding athlete, rocked up upper body. I think that he can get a little bit thicker in the lower half as well. A pretty decent blocker for being a smaller tight end as well. I think that kind of comes with the explosiveness and just pure power that he possesses. But huge game against Texas A&M. He's had two huge games against the best competition they're going to play all year. And if he ends up coming out as a junior, he could be one of the top tight ends taken in a really, really good tight end class that we will talk about on Thursday's podcast. But I wanted to bring this up. I don't think he'll declare, because he's going to end up going to a P4 school and a big time P4 school next year if the grades are okay and if he gets an agent that will facilitate that, because there's no reason, and you talked about this even before I actually got eyes on him, that you wondered why he wasn't at a P4 school this year. Now I'm wondering why in the heck he is not at a P4 school, because this dude is way too talented to be playing at Bowling Green.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a little undersized, but I mean, it's hard to poke a hole in his game. Yeah, he's stiff, and I think that's it. But like 40% of his snaps in the slot, he's got alignment versatility. 227 of his yards are after the catch. Like, he is a legitimate weapon with the ball in his hand, and what he's doing, like, in his depth of target isn't like they're just throwing him screens. Yes, they are throwing him screens because he's so good with the ball in his hand. His average depth of target in this game was 7 yards. So like, deep, underneath, manufactured touches, like this, the Bowling Green offense, again, it's Bowling Green. The Bowling Green offense runs through Harold Fannin Jr. It doesn't work without him, which is really funny because they have a former SEC quarterback starting for them as well. But that offense does not work without Harold Fannin Jr. But between declaring and transferring up, though, do you think even a P4 school could match his guarantees of a day 2 contract? Because I think if he's declaring, he's going day 2, right? Like, do you think an NIL can match those guarantees of a day 2 guy?
I mean, probably not. And then you have to wonder about why he didn't transfer up this past year as well. So, I mean, you don't often see the true juniors from lesser schools declaring
especially at tight end. Yeah. But you don't see a lot of true junior tight ends in general. Yeah.
No, you don't. But I mean, the way that he's producing and producing against the best competition, I think that there's a good chance we do see him in April.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll have a draft on draft. I have one in my mind that maybe we'll talk about off air and maybe come back to a draft or draft about Harold Fannin Jr. to just keep the theme of the Bowling Green tight end going.
Yeah.
My third and final guy, I'm going to go to the offensive line, and it's an offensive lineman that I've said on the podcast I wasn't a big fan of over the summer. But he had a tremendous game against Iowa. So I talked about an Iowa guy against Minnesota. I'm going to talk about a Minnesota guy against Iowa now. That's offensive tackle Ariante Ursary from Minnesota. Big dude, 6'6", just long, long dude. In this game against Minnesota, he didn't give up, or against Iowa, he didn't give up a single pressure. And Iowa's defensive front has some dudes, especially along the interior. So he only got them when they came on games towards him. But like, I thought he did a phenomenal job in this game. His foot speed's a little bit better than I thought it was. Again, typically I don't love big, long offensive tackles because I think they tend to have leverage issues. I didn't see it in this game. And in fact, I saw probably three or four pancakes where he's rolling on top of guys. So you love to see that. But again, in this game, he had 40 pass rushing snaps and zero pressures allowed. So that's a pretty good outcome on a Saturday afternoon. In fact, he's only allowed two pressures all season. Again, that includes playing North Carolina, whose program's a little bit in flex, but other than that, that's the only real other opponent they've played. So again, Ursary wasn't huge on him. I thought he was a little bit clunky in his pass set. Again, I just don't love tall corner or tall offensive linemen, because I just think defenders get into their chest pretty easily. But he's proven me wrong here a little bit, and he's thrown some snap traps out there. He's got tremendous length, 6'6", 330. So Arionte Ursary, I was really blown away by his tape against Iowa this week.
Love getting a little bit of offensive line love. I don't think that offensive line gets enough love in these NFL draft podcasts just in general. It's not the most exciting for a lot of the listeners because they want to talk about wide receivers and running backs and tight ends and defensive ends, or outside linebackers, whatever you want to call them. Josiah Stewart from Michigan had one heck of a game against USC. 8 pressures, 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, 5 defensive stops, and was pretty fun in coverage as well. I sat down and I watched the tape of that game. I was told that he should get a helmet sticker for this game on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. And I went down, I sat down, I watched the tape, and immediately when I saw him from one side, from the far side, I was like, okay. I was like, really, really nice pass rush. And then he came over to the opposite side where you could get like a better view of his frame. And I was like, that's a safety. That's a safety. He's listed at 6'1", 245. I would be shocked if he is either of those things, but he is shot out of a freaking cannon. Really nice ghost move to beat the left tackle. Number 76, he's a redshirt freshman for USC. Had issues all day against him. He got absolutely bullied by him. He also beat up on the right tackle a couple times as well. Like I said, he's able to drop into coverage. He has that sort of athleticism, that sort of juice. A little bit of a Josh Uche type of player there for Michigan. But I also liked his ability to convert speed to power a couple times. He forklifted the left tackle right back into the quarterback, Miller Moss. I would also like to point out that there was a pick six in that game, and Will Johnson is telling you all, don't forget about me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm still really good at this cornerback thing. But no, Josiah Stewart, really, really awesome game from him. Somebody who was not on my radar before this week, saw the numbers, was told to watch his game, and it thoroughly impressed me. Really quick player, really explosive, and a lot better bend than I thought I would get from him. But if he's 225 pounds, it's going to be really tough to survive on the edge at the NFL level.
Right, right. But I do love a good DPR. We talked about this last week with Mike Green, who also had a sack against Ohio State on a nasty, nasty spin move on the right tackle. But I do love a good DPR. And Josiah Stewart, yeah, you can't deny that production. So I'm excited to go check him out. Again, he's only a fourth year, so I think he could technically go back if he wanted to.
He is a Coastal Carolina transfer.
Coastal Carolina to Michigan pipeline is wide open, as many have been saying. But yeah, you mentioned Will Johnson too, because I think Will Johnson's going to become one of those players that people just get bored with, you know, like Kyle Hamilton a couple of years ago, and who are just like so good that there's no hole in their game. And you're just like, you stop watching them at some point. You start watching all these other guys and you think, oh, this guy might be better than Will Johnson. And then you watch Will Johnson, you're like, no, he's not.
Yeah.
No, he's not. Will Johnson's that. There's a reason that he was Dane Brugler's top prospect in the class. There's a reason that we talked about on a podcast about Will Johnson being the best player in the class. And we both said, yeah, probably at this point. Maybe Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter's really stinking good. Oh my gosh. But Will Johnson is tremendous. But Very funny enough, every player that we mentioned here, I write for SI Draft as well. I put all of them in my helmet stickers as well in my article, my week four helmet sticker article in there. I also added our boy Trey Harris as well. So Trey, we didn't mention in the podcast.
Hey, Trey's been going off.
225 this past week. Again, they played Georgia Southern, but
yeah,
225 this week. So
those are the helmet stickers, ladies and gentlemen. And don't forget, we are here 4 days a week, Tuesday through Friday. And tomorrow we have our, I mean, listen, I think that all of our podcast episodes are fun, but I specifically think that our Tuesday and Wednesday podcasts are, or no, Wednesday and Thursday podcasts are the best, because they get out a little bit from what we do from the objective NFL draft lens, and we get to just have a little bit of fun. And I think tomorrow's is going to be really fun, because we are going to talk about somebody who is getting comped to the best quarterback in the NFL and arguably the best quarterback that we have ever seen. So make sure that you guys tune in for that. Until tomorrow, this has been Daft on Draft. He's the fake Corey Kinnon. I'm Dalton Miller. I love you guys. Goodbye.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.